You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Well, wrestling fans know him as the Total Package, or the Narcissist. He spent 15 years in the ring, and during that time won the heavyweight championship belt three times, folks. Count them, three times. But the train wreck was ahead of him. Betrayal, sex, drugs, arrest, death, prison, paralysis, pretty much destroyed him. And then, like so many others whose lives have turned into a total train wreck, Lex Luger was forced to look up. Joining us for the first time on our show, and you know what, last time, Tim, remember the last time we interviewed a wrestler?
Yes, don't mention Tim Hortons.
I said this is the last time I'm going to interview a wrestler, because the last guy, who shall remain nameless, was such a putz. Folks, Mr. Lex Luger, how you doing, man?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. What a lead-in.
Yeah, I tell you.
I love it.
Well, we're doing good. We're doing good. What have you been up to? We want to stick our nose into your private life. What did you do today, Lex?
I just ran over from meeting some wonderful friends over at the Starbucks in front of my community here, and I looked at my phone. It was like 5 minutes before the interview. I go, man, I got to get out of the Starbucks. It's too noisy here. So I just ran back to my condo. As I came in the door, you rang, so the timing is perfect.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Listen, the first question I have for you is, you are originally from Buffalo, or the Buffalo area, are you not?
Yes, sir. Born and raised.
Okay. Did you see as many fires as were reported on Eyewitness Channel 7 News? North Tonawanda was always on fire.
Irvine.
Hey, there we go.
Yes, big Irv. Good old Irv. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, well, us Torontonians, us here in Southern Ontario, we knew all about Irv Weinstein. As a matter of fact, I've got a buddy of mine, and you know him as well, you know Rob Gerber.
Gerbs, yeah.
He said he was walking down the streets of Buffalo, and he said he saw this guy, and he looked at him, and, you know, he was walking the other, like, towards him.
Yeah.
And I know this guy. And, you know, he was trying to figure his name out. I know this guy. And just as he got within, like, 2 inches from his face, he goes, Irv Weinstein! Scared the crap out of him.
Rick Azar, the voice of the Bills.
Yeah.
Rick Azar, yeah. Commander Tom.
Yeah, Commander Tom, the weatherman.
Commander Tom. I forgot all about Commander Tom. Oh, my goodness.
A little Buffalo, Toronto, deja vu.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope that you guys never win the cup, because you will just burn that city down, I'm telling you.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. I doubt this year. Unfortunately, our underachieving Sabres right now.
Yeah.
Man, the guy redid everything from top to bottom, and they're barely 500.
Yeah, sorry about your luck. Okay, listen, childhood. Let's do a little chronological thing.
Yes, sir.
I would like to know who Lawrence Wendell was. Who was Lawrence Wendell? Like, what kind of a person was Lawrence Wendell?
Well, I don't know. I seem to have lost that name to my professional, or my what I call it, my nickname. But Lawrence Wendell, he's a young man who grew up in Buffalo, dreaming of visions of playing in the National Football League and dancing his head, being a big sports star. So I really, that was my real passion and focus back then, growing up. Once I got to high school, in my middle school, like everybody else, I think I wanted to be an Olympic gold medalist when I was in the middle school. Or I think when I was at elementary school, my main goal was to be a fireman.
Okay, that'll work. But when you were
probably going back to what we talked about earlier, all those fires in Buffalo.
That's right. Okay, but when you were growing up, Lex, I think, you know, would you call yourself maybe one of the original latchkey kids, right? Both your parents worked their butts off.
Yeah, both my parents are, I have them both still here today in Buffalo, and they, hard-working folks, own their own little small business, and they're in retail, and they were there at their little shop 7 days a week, so they weren't, I was one of the original latchkey kids coming home. I had an older brother and sister who wanted nothing to do with me after school. So I was on my own.
Man. But school, though, school was easy for you. I mean, brother, you got straight A's, right? And sports was easy. You even got the scholarship to Michigan, I think?
Yeah, Penn State originally. I ended up at University of Miami Hurricanes. But originally, going back to the latchkey thing just for a moment, you know, back then in Buffalo, the neighborhood I lived in, everybody was so wonderful. Everybody looked out for each other back in those days that I didn't really feel like a latchkey kid, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
All my friends, parents, everything, they looked after you like you were their own. So I say latchkey a lot of times, but I had a great neighborhood I grew up in.
I've got 37 questions here for you, but this is the one I really want to know the answer to, okay?
I'll try not to slow you down. I just backtracked on you.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I get that. And I think, I'm in my mid-40s, and we think back, and it's the common recall. We think back to when we were younger, and, you know, you could wander about without worrying about this side or the other. So I get what you're saying. Here's the question I really want to know the answer. How in the world did you get kicked out of University of Miami?
That is an often-asked question. They go, man, the renegade school that was, they didn't have many rules. How did you get kicked out? I remember a teammate of mine playing for the Buffalo Bills for years, Don Smith. He was a defensive tackle. He played at the University of Miami. He said, man, Lex, you were just – he's shaking his head almost – I don't mean this in a good way – in awe that, wow, you were just too much for him. It wasn't one particular incident in retrospect. It was – I was like the Chinese water torch. I kind of nickled and dimed him to death with incidents of rebelliousness after incident. It had a cumulative compounding effect. I finally, the coach was loose saving time. He goes, man, that's it. You're out of here.
Wow. Now, right after Miami, did you go? Was that when you went to the Alouettes?
I did. First, I embarked on a very upwardly mobile career of bouncing at nightclubs in Lauderdale. But after that, I ended up in the CFL. Alumni, actually, of University of Miami put a word out to a scout up in Canada. This kid's 19 years old, and he had a lot of potential. He got kicked out. He's not doing anything. They brought me up there for training camp. Crazy.
And then got on the Green Bay roster. Never made the show, though, but you were on the roster. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to play in the NFL. I got injured at Green Bay, and when I was there for a year. And when I got injured, the USFL and the Donald Trump League had just formed. So I ended up, after 1 year at Green Bay, going into the United States Football League.
Right. And that's, of course, where you played with my good friend, the guy that actually got me into kicking 100 years ago, Zenon Andrusician, the Big Z.
Yeah, we had a no doubt.
He was with Tampa Bay Bandits there for a good chunk of time. And actually, Z was on our show. He sent me an email about 6 months ago. He said, hey, I see you're a big radio star now interviewing celebrities. Why don't you get a real celebrity on the show? Why don't you get me? Anyway, that was him.
That sounds like him.
Yeah. So your wrestling debut, that kind of all happened in Florida, I think?
Yeah, I didn't grow up watching wrestling. I never had been to a wrestling match. My first wrestling match I'd ever been to was when I actually was wrestling in my debut in the Oceanfront, Daytona Beach, Florida, Oceanfront Center against Coco Samoa.
Coco
Samoa. It was in Halloween of 1985.
Wow.
October 31st, I believe. And I had trained. I had walked in the offseason of football. I'd heard all this talk about wrestling and WrestleMania and Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant sold out. So I was just looking into it as an alternative career from football. And I walked into Championship Wrestling in Florida, and a guy named Hiro Matsuda trained me. I had my first match before the offseason was over, and man, it was like the 4th of July fireworks. Talk about the right place at the right time. The rest was in those fireworks never went out, guys. It was an unbelievable 15-year ride as far as the wrestling part of things, championships. And I got them with the Horsemen, which was one of the all-time bad boy groups. And we had all the titles. The world, Ric Flair had the world title, and Arn Tully had the world tag team. I had the American U.S. title. I mean, it was incredible. From start to finish my career.
Yeah, I mean, let's throw out these highlights, right? The slam heard round the world when you picked up the big bear, right? Yokozuna, boom!
Yeah, 627 pounds. It was incredible.
And then there's the Narcissist, the Four Horsemen, like you said, the most revered and most hated.
Yeah.
It was NWO. I had a friend of mine. A friend of mine is a big wrestling guy, Andy Walton, and he wanted me to ask you, who was harder to work with? Everyone wants to know, who did you really love working with? But he wants to know, who was harder to work with? Who was someone that was a bit stiff, that didn't kind of, they didn't pull their shots as well as they should have? They came a little hard on you.
Well, I've worked with so many top guys, and most of them are pretty good at what we do, else they wouldn't be top talents in wrestling. The only guy, it wasn't intentional, but he was blind as a bat. His name was Stan Hansen. He was really famous in Japan. One of the top of us, but he is known for his lariat, and he carried a cowboy bell. Cowboy Stan Hansen. He'd get in that ring swinging that cowboy bell around. You try to get in the ring, he'd just miss your head. He couldn't see anything. He was blind as a bat. He'd really, what we call potato you. He'd hurt you in that ring, man. He was just because he had no eyesight.
Yeah. I hate when that happens.
Yeah. He's not the only one. I worked with so many of the great, best guys, and they're usually pretty, they try to be. There's injuries all the time wrestling, even though we try to take care of each other.
Yeah.
Don't really spoil it for anybody out there.
No.
But we try to, and it's definitely a high-risk activity. It's not a desk job.
No, that's for sure. Well, I've become kind of good buddies with a guy named Ted DiBiase. You and I chatted about him the other day. And I actually phoned Ted this morning, left him a message, telling him I was interviewing you. And, he's a pretty, you know, I got to say, let me just get this. I'm going to get off the script here for a second. When it comes to you guys and the wrestlers who are now into the Jesus stuff, there is a little part of me that goes, you know, how genuine are you with this Jesus stuff? Because your career has been spent pulling the wool over people's eyes and doing a little charade, a little acting, a little bit of razzle-dazzle. You know what I'm saying?
No doubt, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, the career is over, and, you know, a pessimist might look in on the outside and go, okay, really, you're just looking for a new career, you know? And really, a lot of these wrestling fans, you know, are sort of, you know, the flyover area, the Bible Belt area, you know, and, well, maybe you should get into the God business because, you know, you could make a little living off this. And so, you know, when I first met Ted DiBiase, I kind of went in with a little bit of pessimism. But, man, I mean, that guy's a genuine Jesus guy, and I have found out since that so are you.
Well, Drew, I appreciate that. It's very kind of you, but Ted's a great mentor of mine, and I'm one of those guys that was tossed in the dirt on him as well. When I heard he became a born-again believer, he was like the first wrestler that I can recall, and I was one of the guys with Ted and I laugh about it now. I said, he's trying to save his marriage. It's not the real deal. I was one of the most skeptical, cynical guys there was about Ted and his claims to be a born-again believer. Not that I even knew what a born-again believer was back then. But I said, man, this religious thing, he's just trying to save his marriage. He got caught doing a bunch of, I thought the stuff and on the road. And I just thought he was trying to save his marriage. And I thought he was using that as a cloak. Boy, 20 years later, he is the real deal. He evangelizes all over the world. He's a great mentor to me and to many others in wrestling now. And he really blazed the trail, Drew.
Well, was there not a point where you, Lex Luger, got to the point where you hated Sting because you lost your party partner?
Yeah, I was not happy with what happened with Sting. I thought I'd lost my best friend. I just didn't understand what becoming a born-again believer is, and I was very upset with him. And we were separated really pretty much. He'd call me and every once in a while, but I really didn't want anything to do with him. I was upset with him, no doubt.
Huh. Well, it's funny, you know,
we didn't have the same place anymore. We couldn't do the same things. I said, man, what's up with that? So, yeah, I was not very understanding.
Well, you look back in your life, Lex, and I guess hindsight, right, 2020, as people say, but you look back in your life, and you must have seen God's hand on your life every once in a while, right? Where you just look back on it now and you go, man, God was hunting me down.
Well, looking back on it a little bit through God's goggles, now I can see it. But back then, I didn't acknowledge God, so I really didn't really realize, understand how many times he protected me and there was a plan and purpose for me. I should have been even at my lowest point back from maybe 03 to 06 before I came, got saved on April 23rd of 06. I could have OD'd at any time, any night, hundreds of times. I was probably at that point, known as probably the most likely wrestler to be found dead. And there's such a long trail of them. God was working in my life, and when I didn't definitely get back to what you asked, when I wasn't even acknowledging him.
Yeah.
I'm very thankful for that.
Well, I think about, just even the motorcycle wreck where it was, I think it was your right arm that was like hamburger meat, right?
Yeah. It's amazing how I was picked. I'll never forget a girl, and you know, I do live on the Bible Belt here. It happened in Atlanta, the wreck. I had a wreck on one of my toys back then, living the life of folly. As Solomon says in the book of Ecclesiastes, I had a head-on collision with a car on a blind curve at about 45 mile an hour, and I missed every single tree. There's trees the size of mini redwoods. I missed every one of them. I was mangled up and messed up, and the girl, I remember her saying she was a sister, man. She was going, man, you should be a DOA, a DOA. I never forget. I go, what's a DOA? She was dead on arrival. I hope you're thanking God and praising God. And I remember those words ringing in my ears now, but I didn't think about it back then. I just thought I got all healed up and I was Lucky Larry and I was back on my path of fame, fortune, and glamour as a wrestler traveling the world.
Well, you know, you were also known for a guy who blew a lot of cash on a lot of toys, and a little birdie told me a story about you backing up over your babysitter's car one time.
I definitely was as Ric Flair taught me, mentored me. It's all about image enhancement. So I definitely spent some cash and was, as I said, chasing that life of folly, trying to find true happiness through material things. I definitely pursued that avenue to its fullest, at least to my capabilities. And I was in a hurry to get to the airport one time, and I literally, we just. Wonderful girl, watched her. I had two beautiful young children, and I had to get to the airport. My wife was not home at the time, so we had our sitter Cammy. She's like almost one of our children. She had this brand new car that she just bought. She just turned 16, saved up for years with a babysitting money. I remember the week before that, she just got driving by with my wife. And I go, look at Cammy shining up her car and driver. Isn't that cute? She loves that car. Well, I ran out the door to go to the airport, and I realized she parked behind me back when those big jacked-up trucks were being almost like monster trucks. And that was my airport vehicle. So I threw it in reverse in my usual big hurry back then at warp speed and threw it in reverse and literally almost backed up over her entire car. Smashed down the front hood, the windshield. The windshield was smashed down to the top of the seats. And I pulled back forward, and now there's like 20,000 people waiting for me in Baltimore that night. So I ran back and asked, so Cammy, I am so sorry. She's looking at me real perplexed. I go, we had a little something out in the driveway there. I go, I've got to get to the airport because I was running late for my flights back then. I've got to get to the airport. I'll take care of it when I get back home in a couple of days. I'll never forget backing out the driveway, seeing as she walked out, her face and these big tears rolling down her face. As she looked at her brand new car she saved up for all the time and was shining a complete, like, oh my gosh, it was total. I flew back home and bought her a brand new one with a sunroof. That hers was a couple years old. I felt so guilty.
Oh, man.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You must have so many stories. Lex Luger, of course, is who's on the phone with us. The darkest time. I don't know how we should talk about this in this interview. I've heard you talk about it in other interviews, but you know, I want to be a little sensitive because I know every time you've talked about this, the emotions are still there, dude. I mean, with
no doubt. I mean, when God grabs a hold of your heart and transforms it, he gives you godly remorse for things you did in the past. You're forgiven, and he's allowed me to forgive myself and move forward to be useful to him now. You're useful to the kingdom if you don't. But we're still, though, looking back. It gives you godly remorse and empathy for those you hurt and for the decisions you had made that affected others in a profound way. And so, yeah, definitely it's an emotional thing for me now. I have a fuller appreciation for the when you make those kind of reckless, selfish decisions in your life and that people and how it affects them. It definitely is an emotional thing.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Okay, so let me just bring people up to speed as concisely as possible. You've got your wife and two kids at the one house, one side of town. On the other side of town, you got a condo with the girlfriend. The drugs and the booze are going full-time 24/7. You're spinning a little bit out of control. And then all of a sudden there's the 911 call, which I listened to online. And you were gone. You were you were like a little boy scared to death on that 911 phone call. Where basically your girlfriend at the time, you know, Elizabeth, a close friend as well, she died pretty much in your arms.
Yeah, the lifestyle I was leading back then had ramifications on a lot of those around me. Unfortunately for Elizabeth, she her body didn't hold up, and she died of a drug overdose in my arms on that call. No doubt, it was a very scary time.
And of course,
my life wasn't spinning a little out of control back then. I was burning the candle at both ends, and it was spinning wildly out of control.
Yeah. That was back in 2003 in Atlanta, and it wasn't. Yeah. Now, let me just jump forward a little bit here. Chris Benoit, was he not from Atlanta as well, or in that area?
He lived not far from me down in Peachtree City, maybe about a half hour from where I live here in Atlanta.
Right.
Atlanta's a big area like Toronto.
Okay.
But, I knew Chris, obviously wrestled with him. He lived in the area, no doubt.
Okay, so we got the Chris Benoit story. We got your story that we've just touched on a little bit. Recently, I just watched the Mickey Rourke movie, The Wrestler. And I just keep thinking about all this crazy stuff, you guys, you know, jacked up. And pardon my my assumption here. I don't want to assume, but I'm assuming you were jacked up on roids as well as everything else.
Yeah, that was all part of the mix back then, no doubt.
So now life is totally different for you. It really, I guess, you know, it wasn't that long ago that you were behind bars, and now you're looking back, you've got this remorse, God is softening your heart, he's turned your life around, you've got a really amazing story, dude, seriously. But I'm sitting here now thinking about Peggy and the kids, you know, Brian and Lauren Ashley, and I just... Oh, man. I mean, are you guys okay? Are you okay with your kids? Has there been any repair in those relationships? Because it wasn't just you that, we talked about it just a couple of minutes ago. When your life's spinning out of control, you weren't just messing with yourself. There was a whole lot of people that were getting sucked into that vortex as well.
When I first got saved and God put so many incredible people in my life. They really encouraged me to get out there and tell my story that they could help others. And one of the first times I gave what I learned was my testimony, my story. I talked about how I lost my family in the process of all those horrific decisions I was making, how it impacted them. And a guy afterwards, how I thought he's come telling me, well, man, great job in that testimony, Lex. Man, that really touched me. You know, and guy comes to go, hey, I got something for you. I go, what? He goes, that part about you lost your family? I go, yeah. I was ready for this real, you know, the compliment or something. He goes, man, you didn't lose your family. He goes, you gave them up.
Whoa.
Yeah, talk about getting hit between the eyes with a sledgehammer. I changed that, my testimony from there on out. I decisions I made, and I gave up my family. And I didn't lose them. And, there's still ramifications to this day. I'm so thankful for what God has done for me and what he's done in my life and how he's rebuilt and transformed my life in so many miraculous ways. But there's still repercussions and things for what we did before. And we have control over our lives each day forward, like I said. But once again, the relationship, and I thank you for asking, and I appreciate that. There's been some breakthroughs God's provided with my daughter. Not a lot with my son at this point. There's been some breakthroughs with my ex-wife, Peggy, and we're able to speak now. But I'm very hopeful and optimistic with everything else that God's done in my life that there'll be further restoration there for, not really for me, but for them and for their lives, and that's what are in my hopes and prayers.
Dude, this is going to sound a little homoerotic here, but man, after what you just said, I love you, man. That was just the cool. My heart breaks for you, and you just reek of authenticity. You really do. And I hope, like, I know that, you know, getting into the Hall of Fame, you know, is not the be-all and end-all, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it's nice to be recognized. It's a nice thing. But, you know, with all that crap that went down, do you think that's the number one reason it hasn't gone down? It must be. And do you think that'll ever change at all?
Well, you know, you never know. I agree with you. It'd be a great honor. I don't live for those kind of allocates anymore.
No.
Or things. But with all the incredible guys that have been inducted, I would be dishonoring to them if I didn't think it was a great honor. So, like I said, with what God's in my life, I feel there's been a reestablishing my relationship with WWE. They've been tremendous to me in the past few years.
Yeah, I mean, you're also, ways. Are you not a part of, or at least are heading up, I don't know, something, the wellness program? What's up with that?
Well, they've really gone to great lengths to really try to, in the prevention end of things. I'm doing some things unofficially with them at this point, but that's developed as well, to work with some of the guys who are having any challenges or struggles and get them the right kind of help that they need. So they've really welcomed me back into their family, so to speak, and I'm excited about that and what the future holds with them as well. And any honors or things that ever would come along with it, obviously, would be wonderful, and it would be graciously accepted. So you never know, you know?
Are you still doing the YRP classes that DDP put together?
Yes, he's worked with me. You know, I wasn't that close to Dallas when we wrestled. We were friends, of course. We both lived in Atlanta, but... Once again, what God does in your life, when I was paralyzed and in Shepherd, Dallas has turned into like an incredible, I mean, fitness, biomechanics, YRG yoga, I mean, incredible fitness expert. He would fly in and visit me in Shepherd and tell him, dude, you're gonna get some movement back, because my original diagnosis of Shepherd was 0 to 5% chance from all the top neurologists in the globe to ever have any movement from the neck down. So, man, but he was turned out to be another amazing guy that God's reunited in my life, and we're very, very close now, and I'm very happy and thankful as well of my friendship with Dallas now. He's a good man.
Yeah, and folks, you know, Lex and I are chatting about this because we know the backstory, but I've neglected to bring you up to speed on this. Not only, I mean, there's enough story here for about 37 country songs already. But not only did all that crap go down in Lex's life, but again, like he just said, he was told he would have a 0 to 5% chance of any movement ever again. He was paralyzed from the neck down. As a result of, what the heck was it again?
I cut the blood flow off. They have a fancy name for it. I don't even know how to say it. But I cut the blood flow off on an airplane flight by doing a little heavy workout right before I got in the plane in my, like, shoulder, neck, and trapezius area. And I, due to all that normal wear and tear you expect in the neck region from my 30 years of human crash tummy of football and wrestling, the bone spur stuff, when I had my head turned, talking to someone in the airplane for a long period of time, cut the blood flow off to my central cord, and that's a big no-no, lights out. So their diagnosis and prognosis was no movement from the neck down for the rest of my life. Wheelchair, electric chair, the van with the lift, the whole deal. 24-hour care, water, feed me, brush my teeth for me, bathe me, the whole deal, clothe me.
See, you should not have slammed the Big Bear.
Let's just say that these earthen vessels for all of us eventually wear out, but I probably got about 100 lifetimes wear out of mine, and it took its toll on an airplane flight. But
yeah.
You know, looking back now and my football career and wrestling and what God's done in my life now, I and what he's taught me through that injury, and the people he's put in my life once again from that injury in my life, God has a plan and a purpose, and it's been a blessing in disguise.
We'll round this off with a couple of lighter things here. Ric Flair, is this true? Mm-hmm. I know you worked with him like about 1,000 times, but is it true that he said...
I saw him a month and a half ago for hours backstage. Sting came into town for an Impact Wrestling show near Atlanta. I went back to, I was hanging out with Rick again for about a couple hours. We had a blast.
That's cool. That's very cool.
Well,
is it true that he said that you and Ricky Steamboat had the best pecs to chop?
Yeah, he always told me that. He used to make mincemeat out of mine and make them bleed all the time. he chopped me so hard. And he really, I guess that's why he did. He said that I made the best sound from all that work I did on the in the gym on my pectoral muscles back then. He said I had great chopping pecs, whatever that means. Very flattered.
Had the best time being a heel or a baby face?
I enjoyed both, but I think sometimes being the bad guy, it's easier to get people to dislike you than it is to like you. They have to trust you and embrace you, so you can mess with the fans' heads more and have more fun in the ring with the guy you're in, because the bad guys usually lead the match. So I would say, overall, it's a little more fun being the bad guy.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. That's why I do this show. yeah. All right, so listen, taking the title from Hulk Hogan, 97, I think it was?
Yeah, what a surprise that was. Wow, what a highlight.
That's pretty cool. There was some story I came across.
Walking to the ring, they told me, because the internet had become so prevalent, the business was spoiling everybody's surprises and the rumors. So Hogan walked up to me right before the match and goes, "You're going over tonight." I go, "This isn't a pay per view. This is national TV. Like, no one drops a world title, especially Hogan. You've never done it on TV. You wait for the pay per view." He goes, "No, I'm dropping the title in the ring tonight." This is right before I walked out to the ring.
Wow,
it was incredible. Detroit, man, they went insane when, because the NWO, he was the bad guy then, Hogan and the Black and White, and they, man, he had such heat when they figured out that I'd actually won, and the bell went off on having the rack, and he gave up, and the bad guys had been cleared out of the ring. The crowd went crazy. Talk about one of the highlights. It was insanity in that arena that night. It was great.
Dude, great story. You have got just an amazing, amazing story, and I got a pretty good, I'm not sure if I can say this, bull fecal matter detector. I can figure out pretty quick if someone's spinning the nasties at me. And I love your heart, man, your authenticity. When you spoke, did you not go and do a chapel at Tyndale a few weeks ago?
Yeah, I did, up in Chicago. They're a nice group of people. They wanted to hear my story at their a week ago. We had a great time. They're nice people there. They're a big publishing company.
I talked to a lady there, and they loved you. Loved you.
Nice people.
Yeah. Well, they think
I enjoy doing that.
It's a vice versa. Listen, Lex, thank you for sharing your story, your guts with us on our show, man. And I really, look, the leftover, the residual of this interview for me is my prayer life sucks, but when I do actually pray, I will pray for restoration with you and the kids and the ex, the kids, obviously, importantly.
Yes.
So,
well, Drew, thank you so much for having me on and your kind words, and I appreciate those prayers. Thank you so much.
All right, buddy. You take care, man.
You too. Bye-bye.
Lex Luger on the Drew Marshall Show. See, I'm back to liking
all
wrestlers
again. All my friends are going to be so jealous.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I got a bunch of guys at work. You talking to Lex Luger? Especially, I made the connection with Commander Tom and Irv Weinstein.
Commander Tom, I forgot about that. That's right. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about the Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. You ready for this? For $12.50, that's right, only $12.50, we'll mention your organization's name, website, and a brief description. Did you catch that? During each show, we'll read out your organization's name, website, and a brief description for only $12.50. Now, obviously, there's no point in doing that only once during a four-hour show, so we'll read your advertisement four times per show for an entire month, and each time we do it, it'll only cost you $12.50. It's kind of like putting an advertisement up on every church bulletin in the GTA, except you don't have to get permission from that grumpy old lady at the front desk. Now look, because there are limited spots available for our 1250 special, why don't you call us right now, toll-free, on 877-JOY-1250. Now sure, we're right in the middle of things here in the show, but if you call us right now, toll-free, on 877-JOY-1250, we'll take your name and number and call you back on Monday to sign up for the Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. This is nuts. Are you sure we want to do this? How am I supposed to make any money?